our time with Uncaged.
Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple, and you're locked on to the UK's hottest politics and music podcast. Each week, I bring you the rawest takes on the big stories making the news, always joined by a very special guest. Then, I pleasure your mind, body, and soul with the freshest, most banging international music going.
Uncaged.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge my...
What's up, everyone? I am Steve Topple. It is Sunday, the 5th of May, and that can only mean one thing. It's a special edition of Topple Uncaged. What's that, Tommy? Something thick, creamy in your eye. Something in your eye, Tommy. Oh my, that was quite amusing, wasn't it? Tommy Robertson got milkshaked in the run-up to the local elections. And while, of course, yes, it made us all laugh and was a bit of a comeuppance for the far-right reprobate, the local elections and the results had a bit more of a serious side. There were scenes of fighting across the country. Both main political parties were, as the mainstream press put it, punished in these elections. But what was most interesting, that UKIP didn't make the gains maybe some thought it was going to. But overall, the local election results show two things. Firstly, with the Tories losing over 1,300 seats and Labour only losing 82 but not being able to make up any gains, people are disillusioned with the two main parties. However, what's also interesting, it doesn't appear they are that disillusioned that they will vote for UKIP. Liberal Democrats, of course, gained 704 seats, with independent parties and people picking up over 600. But one thing is for certain, it's probably not the last time Tommy Robinson will get something thick and creamy on his face. Nothing thick and creamy here, though, because this week's edition of Topple Uncaged is a scorcher. I will be bringing you the quickest news roundup of the UK with plucked news. I will have a very special guest going in on a story that no one else has given much coverage to. I have, of course, got Twitter chirps back, your chance to air your washing line of dirty laundry. And I've got one of the most innovative musicians going on this week's Revolutionary Bird Song. So quickly, suck up your milkshake. Let's get going.
The perfect blend, that's what you have.
It's the UK's quickest current affairs roundup. It is plucked news. Yes, it is the UK's quickest news roundup. It is plucked news, where I bring you five of the major stories from the past week, but what I also give you is some of the headlines you won't see behind them, and of course my own personal take on things. So, pin back your lugholes, and let's get going in 3, 2, 1. And first up, we're off to Sky News, and they reported a blood inquiry. Mother says, I'm not dying quietly, during emotional hearing. Yes, this is of course the contaminated blood inquiry, where almost 3,000 people died after being infected with either HIV or hepatitis C in the 1970s and 1980s. This was blood that was being dished out by the NHS when people required transfusions, and it has only in recent years actually got the full attention it deserves. There is now a government-backed public inquiry into this. However, there are a couple of issues here. Firstly, we have seen so many public inquiries before. Is this one going to be any different? Is it not just going to be yet another whitewash of the situation? And will the people ultimately responsible, the chiefs of the NHS at the time, and the government at the time, and the politicians, be held accountable? Or will we just get fobbed off with some low-level people being reprimanded? And the well-worn phrase, yes, lessons will be learned. Who knows, but some of the people speaking this week at the inquiry have been given some devastatingly harrowing stories, and it is great it's getting so much media attention. However, one of the biggest medical scandals of recent times that isn't getting so much attention is, of course, myalgic encephalomyelitis, commonly known as ME, which I talk about later in the show as a special guest, and the PACE trial, which was a flawed scientific study into ME, showing that cognitive behavioural therapy and graded exercise therapy were the best things to get people better. It was, of course, a load of nonsense. But moreover, this is hundreds of thousands and millions, probably, of ME patients across the world who have been abused and ultimately made worse by the results of PACE trial. More on this later on the show, but that is one of the biggest medical scandals of recent times. And of course, what also ties into this is a host of other chronic illnesses. Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, lupus, Lyme's disease. All these things have awareness weeks and days in May. But once again, these are also illnesses which are often dismissed by medical professionals and not treated appropriately. So, what am I saying? There is a whole host of chronic illnesses out there in this country and globally which are not recognized, not treated correctly, and patients are essentially left to rot. That is one of the biggest medical scandals of this time, trust me. And for story number two, I'm off to BBC News, and they reported that local elections results in maps and charts. Yes, this is, of course, the story I was talking about in the introduction, the local elections, where the Tories lost upwards of 1,300 seats and Labour lost 82, but didn't manage to make hardly any gains. Gains were made by the Greens, independent parties, and, of course, the Liberal Democrats. But look, what no one is talking about with this story is we are still using first-past-the-post to vote in elections. As was summed up in Havant, a council in Hampshire. Electoral Reform Society found that even though the Conservatives just got 43.9% of the vote across the town, they won every single bloody seat. And this is a perfect example of where first-past-the-post fails us. It is not giving us a true reflection on what people are actually voting for in this country, and therefore they feel their votes are wasted. And therefore, while we haven't got the results of the turnout for the local elections that were held on Thursday just yet, I bet my bottom dollar it was probably in the 30-odd percent. So therefore, people are completely disenfranchised by politics. They feel their votes don't count. Moreover, they feel politicians don't represent them. Maybe if we had proportional representation, smaller parties like the Greens and the UK Socialist Party might make more ground. And of course, this is all without mentioning Tory election fraud in 2015, the most disproportional election in British history. But ultimately, local elections, they mean nothing. All they've done is shown what a divided, disproportionate society we now live in. Issues are becoming polarised, no one is finding any common ground, and we're essentially all, the public, fighting amongst ourselves, which is of course what the establishment wants. We have to snap out of this, but one way which would help would be proportional representation. We need it now. And for story number three, I'm off to The Guardian, and they reported that Venezuela, Maduro thanks military and denounces senseless coup mongers and traitors. Yes, this is of course the ongoing situation in Venezuela, where US corporate-backed Guaido tried a military coup this week, but of course it failed miserably. Look, we've been here before, this is old ground, I've reported about it a lot and a lot and a lot. We know this is a US-backed corporate coup in Venezuela. Why? Largest untapped oil reserves in the world. But what's not being reported on that much is the real anti-establishment backlash that is going on across the world. You wouldn't know it, but Gilets Jaunes is now in his 25th week of protest in France. Yes, 25 weeks these guys have been going. Meanwhile, you can travel across the world to Sudan, to Haiti, to Honduras. All over, there are anti-government, anti-establishment uprisings. Now, the challenge with these are, is that quite often they're going to be infiltrated by Western powers. I personally think that's what's going to happen in Sudan, don't get me wrong. The country's leader is an absolute dictator. But what will happen is people will be installed who will back Western agendas and it will just be another corporatist shit show. And this is sadly all I believe that will happen. We will see the last desperate attempts of Western fossil fuel backed capitalist corporatist countries desperately scrabbling around in Africa and South America to take over nations which have some of the last few untapped fossil fuel and mineral reserves in the world. I could write a book on this, but trust me, it'll keep happening. We need to watch these government uprisings very, very, very carefully. And for story number four, I'm back to the BBC, and they reported that new built homes not fire safe, BBC investigation finds. Yes, this was the segment on this week's BBC Watchdog. Yes, I did watch Watchdog, interestingly enough. I wasn't very impressed with it, by the way. Which found that houses developed by Persimmon and Bellway Homes did not meet fire regulation standards. Oh my god, shock horror. Yes, this is all very bad, but of course what they didn't talk about, is how many homes that exist already are not fire safe at all. I know for a fact, under my housing association on my council estate, none of our houses have got proper fireproof doors in the kitchen, even though our housing association says they are. Moreover, the whole of Watchdog managed to go the entire segment without even mentioning Grenfell. And of course, what's going on behind the scene with Grenfell is the apparent blacklisting of some residents and activists who've been campaigning on this issue. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was good that Watchdog covered this, but you almost were there, BBC. Almost, but not quite. Fail again. And for story number five, and I could not go this week without mentioning...
You stupid boy.
Yes, don't tell him, Pike! Gavin Private Pike Williamson, who was booted unceremoniously out of cabinet by Theresa May for allegedly being behind the Huawei leak. Now, look, I don't know if he's behind the leak or not. He has strenuously denied it. The Prime Minister seemed pretty adamant in one of the most scathing letters she's ever written. But I have to say, it's a delight to see this cluster-fucking politician being booted out of cabinet. As I've been saying since last year, this man was the Private Pike of a Dad's Army cabinet of buffoons. Overeducated beyond his intelligence, unable to determine his arse from his mouth, it is very nice to see the back of him. However, there was a very interesting tweet this week by him. He tweeted a picture of himself in McDonald's saying, I think I've had my chips with a milkshake in hand. Maybe he ought to hook up with Tommy Robinson. And that's it for Puck News, and we get straight into this week's... Soaring above this week's top stories, I'm free flying with My guest on this week's podcast is an indefatigable campaigner and a mother who, in my opinion, is one of the leading lights in a movement of millions of people who have been systematically abused by the state and the medical profession. She is always on point with her opinions, and it is very exciting to have her on the podcast, especially today as the 5th of May marks the beginning of a week of campaigning around this issue. She's brilliant. She's a very good friend of mine, and it's lovely to have her on. It is the fantastic Tina Rodwell. Tina, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Steve, for that wonderful introduction, and it's great to hear you too.
Yeah, we speak an awful lot on Twitter, and it's always really weird when people on Twitter come on the podcast, because I finally get to speak to them, and I feel like I know them anyway, which is all a bit bizarre, but this is the first time we've spoken. So, like I say, thank you.
Because you get an image in your mind of the person, don't you?
Yeah, it's very funny the way we live in 2019 that yes, you do get an image in your mind, and quite often they're not exactly what you thought. But you are, of course, exactly what I hoped you would be. So it is lovely to have you on. Tina, we are here to talk about today a disease called myalgic encephalomyelitis. Some people may know it as ME. Some people may know it as chronic fatigue syndrome, CFS. But me, myself, and yourself, and a lot of other people use the term ME. So we are here because today, Sunday the 5th of May, is the start of a week of campaigning by the group ME Action Network with the hashtag Millions Missing, which is all about ME, the abuse people have suffered who live with this debilitating disease, and what we need governments, the medical profession, etc., to do to right the wrongs that have been meted out against people. So we're here to talk about that. I'd like, first of all, in your own words, please, for the listeners at home, give me an overview of what myalgic encephalomyelitis, ME, actually is. What is it? What are the symptoms like? And just how sort of ravaging is it on a person living with it?
Well, it's a really complicated disease. It affects near enough every system within your body. And the problem is with the post-exertional malaise, shortened to PEM, is that you have like a 24 hours after an activity where you think you're fine and you feel fine, and then you have an increase in new or severity of symptoms, but you don't understand how that could possibly come about. So it confuses everybody because you think you're okay, and then why would symptoms come out 48 hours after you've done an activity? It's a real bizarre illness.
It is, isn't it? And I mean, regular listeners to this podcast will know that my girlfriend, Nicola Jeffrey, she lives with ME along with quite a few other things. And it's very strange the way it operates, isn't it? As you quite rightly point out, you can exert yourself. I mean, we say exert, you can do something that people not living with ME would consider perfectly normal, in fact. And then, as you say, up to 24, 48 hours later, you can be completely wiped out. I mean, the best way I kind of think of it, it's like having the really bad bout of the flu all the time, because that your immune system feels like it's fighting a constant virus. I mean, the history of ME has been sort of a very tarnished one. I mean, the first proper recorded, it was an outbreak of it, actually, wasn't it? In 1936 at the Royal Free Hospital in London, there was an outbreak of what looked like ME. And since then, it's not been properly diagnosed. There's been no official markers for it. Treatment has been extremely controversial, leaving people in even a worse position. It is a very complicated illness, but the history of it and why there's been so much of I hasten to say cover-up, but there has been a cover-up, really. Why there's been such a cover-up over what it is and lack of funding for research. Why do you think ME has, and people living with it, have been left in this position with no treatment, no proper diagnosis, and ultimately no cure?
I think it's an amalgamation of all sorts of things. I mean, the outbreak in Royal Free, there was many outbreaks before that, and it has been accepted that after a virus or some infection, you have this sickness response, physical sickness response. And everybody understands that when you have flu, you spontaneously recover, your body gets back to normal. Well, this didn't happen. And Dr. Ramsey, in 1986, could describe this illness to perfection. But there was a group of psychiatrists that decided that they were... this spontaneous recovery is something we should really look at. Why are they not having this spontaneous recovery? And they looked into the mind holding the body back, and it seemed like a new beginning for psychiatry, and everybody engaged in it. And because we've belittled our mind and our anxiety, that grew momentum. But in 2002, I believe, in Seattle, there was a big conference about ME, and they had all the biomedical evidence that has been the foundation for what we believe it is now. And somewhere in between all the fingers in all the pies with insurance companies, the department work and pension, and political activism by parties using it as a weapon, it's all got confused and hidden. And I think that's the worst thing. People are hidden and demoralized by this illness, that we can believe ourselves better, and because we don't believe ourselves better, then something's wrong with us. And once you get that mechanism going within society, it's very difficult to be open and honest and say, I have ME, I have post-exertion malaise, I can't get better. Because you're told that's what's holding you back. So it's a vicious circle.
It was an excellent explanation of it, absolutely, yes. And there's a lot of information on our website. It's www.thecanary.co, and also on my website, which is mrtobble.com, explaining all this, because it's been a real systematic attempt to, as you say, sort of put the onus on the fact that it's in people's heads and essentially they can think themselves better. It's a damning indictment of the system that we live under. But there is more information on both those websites. So... people living with ME and their advocates, their friends, families, supporters are trying to do something about it. Even though they're bloody, essentially severely disabled, they still have to fight to get the most basic of recognition in society and fight to actually get the research funding that is needed. And they are fighting more than ever starting today for this week. This is, of course, ME Action Network's Millions Missing Week. Millions missing, meaning the millions of people, the estimates are between 17 and 35 million, it's probably a lot more than that, across the world who live with ME and who are essentially missing from everyday life, from their families, from friends, from work, from their communities, because of this illness and because they've been left to essentially rot. So Millions Missing starts today. I mean, just a bit more of an overview. What's going to be happening with Millions Missing? Because there's going to be a fair few events going on, isn't there? What's happening with it this week?
Unfortunately, the BBC and people like that won't report it, but what you will see on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram are absolute heroes. When I go to a Millions Missing event, I am elated by the sheer determination and the heroes that stand there or lay there mostly, because a lot of them will have POTS, post-ostatic tachycardia syndrome. So when they sit their bodies up, they get like blackout sensations and palpitations in their heart. But they still go and they still want their voice heard. There'll be millions laying in their beds holding up posters because they're unable to speak due to their illness. They are an amazing crowd that I am always in awe of. It astounds me. I mean, my son included, he will sit there and, you know, he doesn't really care what people think of him. He is who he is and proud to be who he is. And it's up to other people to see him rather than him trying to explain.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's the kind of key thing with everyone involved in Millions Missing. It's truly making themselves visible, if you like, when ultimately it's society who has made them invisible, unfortunately. But we know this. So it is amazing. I was at the London event last year on the 12th of May, and it's really humbling to see people who are so desperately ill and who've been so desperately and terribly abused by the medical profession and by the arms of government, to see them out and still having to fight. It's humbling. It's also damning, in my opinion, that people are still having to do this. I mean, Millions Missing is this week, but there's the ME Action Network and other groups like the ME Association. They're always campaigning. There's always work going on behind the scenes. 2019, we're now in May. I mean, what do you hope this year will hold for people living with ME? What do you hope, sort of chinks of light we might see?
The first thing I would like to see happen is the NICE guidelines. Listen to the severe end of this. When you read some of the booklets that try and describe the severe, they will say they are sometimes bedbound. I mean, that is an absolute... put your own word in there, I'm not going to say anything, but it is rubbish. The most severe person will have a problem trying to breathe. If any noise comes into the vicinity of them, it is excruciating pain. Not just, you know, when you've got a cold and your ears are a little bit muffled and they hurt a little bit. This is similar to having your eardrums burst all the time, your eyes with needles in them. That's severe, and people have died. I mean, the first recording was Sophia Mercer back in 2005, which is the year my son was born. And in between that time and my son becoming 14, nothing has changed. NICE, please listen to us. Listen to the mums, because we live with, in conjunction with those that have the most severe forms. Nobody's taking our voice because we're demonised as mothers. The next thing I need to happen is all those MPs that were fantastic at the debate, keep going. You are amazing heroes. Thank you so much. I want people's voices to be heard, but most importantly, people like Dr. Speet, who is the ones that come in and help us, support us to get the proper care, to be heard and listened to, and all the researchers that are going into this field, young and those that have been there for a long time. Please get them on the BBC. Come on, let's hear their voices. They are amazing people, and we've got them in the UK, and they're looking into autoimmune and different things in your hypothalamus, for instance, the difference, your hormone imbalance, the blood that can't squish through your arteries because there's something different there, the problems with your mitochondria, oxidative stress, and that's just to name but a few. Listen to what happens to the patient. Look at the post-exertional malaise, understand the mechanisms that are put in place, and support the person 100%.
That is essentially what I would hope to see this year as well, Tina. Again, a brilliant, brilliant summing up. And you hit the nail on the head with listening to people's voices. That is the most crucial thing in this, because often in every area of life, the voices of the people who are actually living with whatever condition it is, but in this case, ME, are often marginalised and people do not listen to them. So I think that is the most crucial point. Tina, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. There's details all in the show notes about Millions Missing, the events that happening next week, some of the other issues we have discussed, and links to lots of information as well. But for the minute, Tina, thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve, and big hugs, marshmallow hugs to Nicola too.
Oh, thank you, darling. I'll pass that on. Thank you. Time for you guys to be on cage, because Twitter chirps back. Yes, it is that time of the week again where we ignore BBC Question Time, and you lot get to have your say on Twitter chirps back. Yes, I put out a tweet every Thursday evening encouraging you to give me your comments on the biggest news stories of the week. And what have you got for me this week? Well, yes, a couple of me old muckers, Paula Peters and Benefits News, both made leak-themed puns. Obviously, that's in reference to Gavin Williamson. Don't tell him, Pike! But Paula Peters said specifically, Tories leaking seats. Yes, they have been leaking seats. But as I said in the introduction, it's a damning indictment of the current state of UK politics, I think. But we will see what happens with the European elections on 23rd. May, Paula. Oh, Rachel Swindon. Hello, Rachel. She accurately predicted that hopefully the loss of many hundreds of blue seats across the country tonight. This tweet was on Thursday. And yes, Rachel, we did lose a lot of blue seats, didn't we? 1,300 and something, actually, to be precise. Moral Myrtle, this is at NikkiStar911. Moral Myrtle says, go through Mr. James Robb tweets and see him promoting Rachel Riley at Man U silencing fake news. That was a group trying to stop the Canary advertising. Yes, I couldn't possibly comment on this, apart from it seems like Mr. James Robb is promoting stop funding fake news. I will have you know, Mr. James Robb, that the Canary has just recently been rated green for trustworthiness by NewsGuard. Yes, international Microsoft-backed establishment NewsGuard. So make what you will of that, but I couldn't possibly comment on... Boo! Rachel Riley. Dawn Sanders says, hashtag climate emergency, empty rhetoric and politicians jumping on the bandwagon. Local elections, riding that bandwagon to an unknown destination. Yes, love that tweet. Spot on, Dawn. Absolutely. I mentioned about the climate emergency earlier, and as you quite rightly point out, empty rhetoric and politicians jumping on the bandwagon. I don't think we're going to see any change, apart from for the benefit of corporations. And my mate Alex Tiffin from UniversalCreditSufferer.com, he says, hashtag welfare emergency. Well, where to begin with that? I mean, if I was still writing for the Canary full-time, which I'm not at the moment, I think I would be writing welfare-related stories week in, week out. So there's a constant welfare emergency. But as discussed earlier on the show, one aspect of that, the millions missing, is currently being addressed in a lot of demonstrations and activism this week. And that's about it for the comments, apart from as Benefits News said, brackets, wish Tories would leak off, though. Yes, don't we all? But hopefully, with the current chaos in the Conservative Party, we could be seeing the beginning of the end of them. Maybe. We'll wait and see what the rest of 2019 brings. That is it for Twitter Chirps Back. As always, tweets will be coming out next Thursday for you to get involved in. You can comment, say what you want, and I will read most of them out on air. And don't forget, boycott BBC QT. And here's this week's banger in Revolutionary Birdsong. I'm proud, but I'm also a bit humbled, really, that my musical guests on my podcast, for me, are always exceptional talents. My girlfriend moans at me because she thinks I lavish a bit too much praise on people. But it's because all the artists that come on here are, in my opinion, absolutely fantastic with some staggeringly good music behind them. And my guest this week is no exception. He released an EP in 2017. He is now back with a full album. And oh my gosh, it is amazing. I'm very, very excited to have this guest on and speak to him because his album, The Immortal Stepper, is absolutely fantastic. It is Black Hero. Black Hero, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's really, really exciting to have you here.
Yeah, man, bless you. I'm really excited to be here. Like, this platform, I was doing my research and I love the type of talents that you guys interview. All the people that I listen to personally. So to be here, I feel like, yeah, I've made it. Like,
That is the best compliment I've ever had. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm blushing this end.
Yeah, man. Because King Mas, Melissa King Mas, Indy Allen, my brother, and there's all the acts of Mr. Common there. People, me, genuinely, like, mess with. So it's a very good band.
Both of those guys are fantastic. Yeah, King Mas and Indy are fantastic. They're both excellent. But so are you fantastic with your latest album, well, new album and first album, Immortal Stepper. I'm not sure where to begin with this, really. The first thing that sprung out to me listening to the whole thing as a complete project, and don't take this the wrong way, and if you don't like it, say, but it immediately put me in mind of Prince and the Power Generation. However, what you've done is brought it up to 2019. I mean that in terms of the fact it is such an experimental, firstly, album in terms of musical genres, which we'll get into in a bit. Also, your vocals are absolutely fantastic. You are such a talented singer. The way you flip from the tenor to the falsetto and back again, and that funky kind of influence with the vocals, that's amazing. And also, the musical arrangements are absolutely stunning. I mean, how does that sum it up for you? I mean, like I say, for me, it's very experimental, and it's like you've brought Prince and his legacy and what he did in the sort of 80s and 90s bang up to date. Is that, would you say it's a fair appraisal? Am I a bit on the money?
It's almost on point, where you, like, definitely on point. I wasn't thinking of Prince, though, like, for sure. Like,
who are you thinking of?
Yeah, it's in that element. Like, I was, like, my influences around this project are just generally in life, is like Michael Jackson, Kirk Franklin, like Elizabeth and Nina Simone energy, a little bit of like Fitzgerald, a little bit of just like old mixed with, you know, like, so it's still on point, where you say, for sure, definitely experimental, in the sense of, we were thinking, like, what's going to be our first album through the door, me and my team, me and the producers, me and the people I rock with, like, what would we want this first project to sound like? And I think what we did that really made it come together properly was not put any defining thing on it. Like, we weren't going for a specific sound, but just like to, like, still have it nostalgic. So it's not like we were directly going for Prince or directly going for MJ. It just happened. Like, there's a song called Mary. I didn't even really listen to Michael Jackson's song called Butterflies until my engineer said, yo, you know what this sound like? I'm like, no, what it sound like? And he's like, yo, listen to this song. And he played it. I was like, oh, it'll give you butterflies inside. Oh, yo, I didn't even really meds that, isn't it? So it's like these things were just happening naturally, organically. Like, the old soul inside of me was just bringing forth the stuff that I was growing up on. So I'd say the album is just a collage of everything I've learned, all the music I've listened to over just being in this world, and just adding my own energy to it. So that was really the album. So definitely experimental, definitely trying to show vocal range, to show that, you know, we have the highs, the lows, the mids. Showcasing the producers in my space too, as well. Like, these are all young producers, all Jamaican. I think one is not Jamaican, but everybody else is Jamaican. So that's 13 tracks that are different and all done by Jamaicans. So that's really what I really wanted to show. Like, the space I'm in, who I'm around, who's in my generation right now, what we're doing. So I think, yeah, all across the board, I'm happy with the album that way. I think we accomplished what we wanted.
I think it's a brilliant, like, summing up of it, because you say it's a collage, and it is a collage. It's musically, for me, it's fascinating. Where's this futuristic influence come from? What is your vision with smashing outside of normal genres, really, and heading into territory which is quite uncharted?
I guess always being, I directly attribute most of the stuff that I do to who I grew up and who I follow very closely. So, being a huge Kanye West fan, especially the early catalog, I was really, really a fan, because he wasn't afraid to change the genres, go outside, mix and mingle the sounds, like, work with different kind of artists outside of his bass genre. So I think that influence on me just left the impression, like, yo, I want to do that for my genre, for my country, for my sound. So the futuristic thing just, it's just me over the years just wanting to do that, and it's just happening naturally. I swear to you, it's so organic. Like, Funk Out happened, like, I mean, my bridging was just the reason. It's like, you know, I have this beat. So it wasn't even like a beat that I planned to, like, use. He just played it, and I was like, yo, this is ridiculously different. Then the melodies came, and then the song came together just naturally with me and Blue. So it's like, I don't even have a sound for it. I feel like any sound that we can't define on the project, I'm just going to call it an immortal sound. It's like, that's like an immortal sound to me. But that's Funko. It's an immortal sound. It's very funky. The topic is very funky. It's up full, positive, dancing vibes. But it's just so undefinable. Like, it's going to take a couple of years before people really say, yo, what this really is. Or, like, what it sounds like. Isn't it? But songs like that, Black Pepper, yeah, man, them just different. Them just different. I have no name for them, no nothing. I hope the people find a name for it, so I can start doing these interviews and be like, that's that sound, that's that sound. It's just natural, legit natural. I didn't even think of it like the future. To be honest, let me share the real. I had this project for like 3 years sitting on, like, being very frustrated with it. So even before it came out, I really thought nobody was going to understand what we were doing. And because I didn't even understand what we were doing. I'm like, no, it's not reggae. Oh my God, it's not bubble. But then when we put it out, my whole, everything just changed. Like the reaction to it really showed me that, one, the music I'm making is timeless. And two, because Herb is from 2012, 2013. Like that's almost 7 years ago. Like, you get me? And songs on it are 5 years old, six, like 3 years old. So the music on it is really from a time before, and it's still able to connect now. So, yeah, like, I guess that's the future. I guess that we were making it for 2019.
That's a brilliant way. You've latched on to something really important there, because, again, it is timeless. Herb, especially, as you point out, was from years ago, and it has got this... I was immediately transported to that sort of 70s funky soul feeling.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that 70s show. It's like all the years of watching that 70s show just came off. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. I wanted to put my flares on there and then. The whole album is timeless, and I think what you've done especially well is by creating, as you say, some sounds which you cannot define, you have therefore created something that will stand the test of time completely. I mean, what also, with the Immortal Stepper, what also stood out for me was there's a lot of African influence in there, from the musical arrangements to your choice of percussion and the way it's used. You can feel an African sort of feeling running through it. Was it important to you to include, if you did it consciously, to include the African kind of culture and the sound within the project?
Definitely was purposeful. And funny thing is, this is so weird, everybody in that was around the making of this album, that's a part of it, their love for music, or what I should say is black music and African music connected them a lot. So everybody in my team, that's their favorite music. That's what they listen to. So when they're making music, it's just natural. When I'm making music, it's just natural to always connect back to African music and black music and all the stuff, that the songs that are out there for us to utilize, like jazz and soul and R&B. Gospel to a sense, isn't it? So I think what happened was, as I said, yeah, naturally it just happened. But with Moving On, that was purposeful, because I feel like I was really trying to go for a Negro spiritual kind of vibe, something where it wasn't really about a catchy hook, it was more about what I'm saying and the passion and the energy behind it. And it's purposefully put at the top of the project for a reason. Like Feed Don't Fail and Moving On, they're placed there for a reason. Like I want to start the album with that vibe, because I could have easily put the softer sounds and the more futuristic sounds. The sounds I know everybody would be like, oh my God, this is great, and would make people look at the project different probably. But just like, I guess like Kanye, when you put, it was Yeezus, and you put On Site at first, which was just crazy, like distorted sounds and like show everybody off a bit. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to like, yo, hit you with that hardcore message first, hardcore sounds first. And then even the sample that's in Moving On was planned, like, that's time back to black music. I don't remember if it was Curtis Mayfield or somebody else or something. I'm not sure. It's either them or the Manhattans, I believe. But yeah, one of them. And just to tie it back directly now to a specific black song, isn't it? So yeah, that was purposeful. All the spiritual messages, African messages, all the stuff like that within the project were purposefully done.
The Immortal Stepper as a project, as a piece of work, should cement those dreams and should take you where you want to go. Like I said in the introduction and said throughout, it is an extraordinary piece of work. It showcases your talents both vocally and musically exceptionally well. It is fantastic, and I really hope it does extremely well for you. Black Hero, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you.
Yeah, man, it's my pleasure. And it's best of the whole podcast family, everybody. Yo, it's a really honor to be here. Reason and talk about the album. And yeah, man, like going forward, when I'm part of the family, so all projects email and I'll get it first, everything. So,
bless up. Thank you so much. Black Hero, thank you.
All right, bless and love.
How amazing is Black Hero? Isn't he one of the most fascinating people you've ever listened to? He's an absolute star, musically, but philosophically as well. And here is one of my favourite tracks from his album, The Immortal Stepper. It is Can I Show Ya? Here it is, Can I Show Ya by Black Hero. What up?
select. Set them up for come better when it comes to the pressure. Man, and off is no beginner, man. Just say we no lose, so we have to be the winner, man. My words come to save, come to save every sinner, man. Say, yo, you're the truth, yeah, with bitter like thirst in a cinnamon. Ice for the price, I in a cinnamon. Mama in a grave, and the food it a feed. So you can't forget the team, while they wake living the dream. Whoa, okay, and things better now, oh, better now. Oh, oh, but the days, I mean, fact, when me never have much, I'm mama fry the chicken back. Never snap all its sprat, and she never have no cooking, and she fry the chicken fast. Whoa, oh, yeah. And they say, I will speak of facts, God knows. Come to the ghetto if you think I lie. To summarize, just bring your eyes up. Can I shine? Yo, I'm pleased for the youths with the grease in on the corner. Yeah. And I waste from God and the pops with marijuana. And when the top won't come, you're the last of all the farmer. Now when comes the karma, yo, repatriation. Them a get it however for worse or for better. The dollar, the naira, the moon or the cheddar. Some said them at the point of giving up, it's giving up. Some said them can't do no better, no better. Some said them a try, yo, we every day, in every way, in every endeavor. Improving smart and clever. Selling up blacks like an umbrella. Just the weather, any weather, you set up countermeasures. Oh,
they can't stop me now. They can't hold me down. They won't, just They can't stop us now. They can't hold us down. They won't. Can I shine?
Yo, a place for the youths with the grease in on the corner.
And that's it. Series 2, Episode 2 of Topple Uncaged is done. I would like to thank my fantastic guest this week, the incredible Tina Rodwell. Follow her on Twitter, it's at Tina Rodwell 1. And the stupendous Black Hero, follow him on Twitter, it's at BLVKH3RO. As always, behind the scenes, thank you to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter, it's at Nicholas C. Jeffrey. My man in the booth, sound engineer Gav Pause. Follow him on Twitter, it's at Pause with a Z Radio. And my in-house singer, Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter, it's at Ray_Star113. Cheers the canary for uncaging me. I'm off to suck hard on something thick and creamy. I'll see you next week.
Uncaged.